Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to another exciting broadcast of The Personal Wealth Coach, where we will say such things as,
Deem.
Fascinating, and there may be other going along. This is The Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure, another Personal Wealth Coach. The Personal Wealth Coach is
Jeff McClure.
Together, we are bald.
We did not get a chance to say our name together.
No, would you like to? I'm Jake, and you are
Jeff McClure.
We did it. See, we just have to have our video conferencing going. Otherwise, it's near impossibility because the timing isn't the way we practice it for decades. There's a little lag in the phone line. So this is part of the pandemic and the change that it caused the whole system. I don't know why we would go back to the studio at this point ever.
Well, that's one of the things I want to talk about today is the fact that waiting for things to get back to normal, you may be waiting a long time.
Or you may just look around and say, oh, this is normal. So we got some disclosures to give before we start talking about fun things like what is normal. And why we are not that. Most people that listen to our program know we're not normal, so that's fine. We will never get back to normal because we've never been there. But the first disclosure we will give before continuing, well, I guess that was the first disclosure. We are not normal. Second disclosure, the Personal Wealth Coach is the name of this radio program, but it's also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. And the two people talking on the air, Jeff and Jake, are the principals at that firm. An SEC-registered investment advisor firm gives fiduciary investment advice. That's in the best interest of the client. And we can't do that on the air. We have to give educational information rather than advice because we don't know everybody out there. On top of that, just so now that we've said that we have a business associated with us, we're obligated to say that. We don't get paid to do this program. We also don't pay to do the program. We've been doing this, you've been doing it since 96, right at the end of the year, 1996. That was another century, another millennium. And I've been doing it since 1998. Again, another century and another millennium. Although I did participate in a minor way in 96 and 97 by occasionally going with you to the studio and watching in mute horror as the microphone light turned on. Those are my disclosures.
I still have a mute horror button here.
Yeah, you mute horror button? Yes.
I punch it. If I get too horrible, I just punch it and I go mute.
Mute horror. They need to make it like a sickly yellow color instead of red. It's just like a
makes sense.
Oranges, yellow, puce color, something like that. Anyway, are you going to deem for us?
I might as well. The information we present on this educational radio program has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of said information.
You say that so well every time. We can obviously tell you take pride in not deeming things.
I do. As a matter of fact, I will also say that the future is always uncertain, so any comments we make about the future are uncertain because nobody can tell you what's going to happen in the future.
Or you could say a little bit differently. Predictions are always uncertain, especially about the future.
Yeah.
Yogi Berra, throw that in there. Because the future is just
like,
not...
That's close to Yogi Berra,
not quite. The future is just not like what it used to be, or that's also right. Almost. So I put a like in there. The future is just not what it used to be. It's true.
It's true.
It's
very true.
All right. So what happened this week in the market and elsewhere? What's the news of the week?
Well, if one just had the economy to deal with, and we'll talk about that during the rest of the radio program, the stock market would be very pleasantly up this week.
We think.
Matter of fact, it was up through Wednesday and was doing very well and was closed in on 4,500. And then not too surprisingly to me, but apparently to the people who don't have good memories or didn't study their history very well in school, it turned out that Russia's so-called pullback from the border really wasn't a pullback from the border. It was a reinforcement of the border. And as a result, the market went into a bit of a funk. And it was down one point. The S&P 500 was down 1.58% for the week at 4348.87, and is down 8.76 so far this year. Now, down 8.76 this year, that's significant, but it's still up 11.32% from this time last year. So an 11% rise in the S&P 500 in a 12-month period still looks pretty good.
But we're nearing correction territory.
Yes,
with that drop
interestingly,
side.
Which is the second time this year we've gotten near to correction, which is down 10%. And one of the things, and we've discussed this before, and I was at one time certified as an intelligence analyst, I can tell you that...
Which is a certification of non-intelligence, right? Is that...
No.
That's an intelligence... You have been certified as being intelligent.
As being able to convert information into intelligence. That doesn't mean I am intelligent.
Oh, into intelligence. Okay, yes. Gotcha. All right. You're making no claim of actually being intelligent, just knowing intelligence. Gotcha. We had to get that out there. Me too.
Were I still in the intelligence analyst business working for the government, I would say there's a better than 90% probability that Russia is going to invade Ukraine. There are no certainties about the future. If it does, and this is something to any investor needs to bear in mind, history suggests strongly that the stock market will enter into a correction immediately, because a lot of people are going to be scared. Fear does that.
Yeah, we're already at that kind of cusp. So have that push us right over the little brink, and we'll have a correction likely.
And I want to state something fairly clearly. This has happened a lot of times in the past. Where there has been a geopolitical event causing a market correction. We had one on 9/11, but 8 months later, the market was back up to where it was before and rising nicely from that point.
There's another, it's less political, more geo event in March of 2020. Pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm. External geopolitical events, historically tend to get associated in our brains with bear markets, but they almost inevitably have nothing to do with bear markets. And when you go back and look at the actual data and the actual way the market behaved, they had nothing to do with each other. It's just that two things happened and we link them together in our brains and we make a story out of it, and generally the story is inaccurate. So the point, and maybe we'll say this several times during the radio program.
You're saying his story isn't accurate? History isn't accurate? Sorry, had to say that. Go ahead.
Okay. His story. Yeah, I got it. The point is that presuming that Russia does invade Ukraine, expect a major market correction as silly people bail out of the market and then more silly people follow them and bail further out of the market. Also recognize that historically, such an event has been, as sad as it is, good for stock values over a longer period of time. The depression, John, we've mentioned this before, but John Templeton, arguably the greatest investor of the 20th century, Sir John Templeton, made his first major foray into the stock market in 1938. And we mentioned in the newsletter this week that this looks a lot like 1938, because he saw that World War II was coming and he saw that it would end the depressed economic state that the world was in as people geared up for war. A lot of things are causing problems in the United States and in the world today. And very frankly, as much as I really, 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 really do not want to see Russia invade Ukraine and start a path that looks amazingly like Hitler's move into Czechoslovakia and later into Ukraine, I do believe that it is positive economically. And that is I'm not saying that, and please do not consider for a second that I think this is a good way to raise the economic status of the world or anything else, because down that road lies a nightmare. But if it happens, don't panic and bail out. That's the important thing to recognize. The United States economy is cooking along, and we'll talk about that. But yep. Let's look at the numbers again on the market. That's what we're supposed to be talking about right now. The CRSP Mid-Cap Value Index, the other thing we follow besides the S&P 500, has been gaining for the last several weeks, but it dropped 1.2% this week. Now, it's worth looking at the fact that the S&P 500 was down 1.58 and the CRSP was down 1.2. It's down 3.38% so far this year, closed at 2509.59. And again, note that it's down 3.38. The S&P 500 is down 8.76. Why is that important? We have been looking for the last year, a rotation out of large cap growth stocks into mid cap value stocks, and we've seen it. It's happening. So it's nice to know that we're being consistent with history. At this point in historical cycles, this type of thing has typically happened, and it is continuing to happen. Interest rates didn't do very much. The 10-year U.S. Treasury note interest rate yield climbed 0.47%. It's now at 1.929%, just below 2%. But the 30-year Treasury climbed 2.38. It climbed to 2.38 for the week, in the middle of the week, but it dropped back to 2.249. Why is that important? Is that Treasury 30-year yield is higher than the 10-year yield. That's important. And the short-term yields are still very, very, very low. So we still have a positive yield curve, which is important to watch out for. As long as we have a positive yield curve, there is a high probability that there's no hint of recession in front of us. And we watch that pretty carefully. Interest rates, as I said, did what they did, not much during the week. West Texas Intermediate crude declined 2.22% to $91.82. Now, if there's a war about to pop up, and Russia being one of the big suppliers of oil to the world, and a war would probably cut off that supply, why would petroleum futures fall? Well, very simply, the $91 number, $91, $92, has already got the high, almost certain probability of a war with Russia, or a war in which Russia is
priced in.
To some degree embargoed from supplying oil to the rest of the world. And remember, it was $60 a barrel not very long ago. And it was hovering in the $60 range, and it's gradually cranked up to the 90-some dollar range, which simply says that people who invest in oil futures and who buy and sell oil professionally have concluded that there is going to be a pretty severe shortage of oil sometime in the near future. And it has a lot to do with the inflation numbers we've seen coming out. The price of oil this year, just this year, is up 27%. And just about everything we do in the United States or elsewhere in the world involves transportation. Anything that we provide, whether it's food at a restaurant or getting to or from the restaurant or products that you purchase either online or in stores, involves transporting those products from one place to another. And with oil up 27%, that's a big piece of what's going on in inflation right now. The other pieces have to do with the supply chain, and we can get into that later too. But that's pretty much the markets.
Yeah. So we've got a couple of emails in from people wishing for us to speak on given subjects. The first one I want to cover is not the first one we got, but it's the fastest one, and it's maybe... Mm-hmm. Easiest and for our brains, a lot of fun. Don emailed in, said that a couple of weeks ago we talked about the coincidence on the second day of February of 2022. And he points out that we're about to hit the 22nd of February, mm-hmm. which, mm-hmm. if you go by European standards, that's 22/2/2022. The way we do it in our office, we always put the year first, followed by the month, followed by the day, which would be 2022/02/22. So that's something that has no bearing on anything at all. But if we're going to have headlines for the market when they break round numbers, we can at least do some palindrome dates. Got it?
I think it's significant. I think it'd be particularly significant if Putin decides that the 22nd of February is the right day.
That would definitely be a date that lived in history.
Yeah, it would be. It's kind of like 9/11. I mean, 911 is our emergency telephone call, and it's also when Osama bin Laden decided he wanted to blow up some buildings.
Though this is shocking to me because of my age, I guess, but when people are polled on what year that happened, about half of the United States doesn't remember. All those never forget. Well, it isn't that they didn't. They weren't alive at the time. If you check the timing, they can drink now, or almost. In September of this year, the people that were born on that date could start drinking. So
it's been a while. I noticed that we went through November 22nd this year with nobody paying any attention to.
Yeah, I've got another little thing to let people know that
a lot of people are scratching their heads at what's November 22nd, but that's, if you don't know, then I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a day we were never going to forget.
Yes. And just to kind of throw it, while we're making people feel old, let's throw another one in there. If Austin Powers were made today, they'd be making it about the groovy swinging 90s. That made me feel old. And if you missed that reference, you probably...
The mere fact that you're talking about Austin Powers makes you old.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So just now that we're done with the date palindromes and making our entire listening audience, except for those of you that are calling the rest of us old, feel old, we can go on to the next question from our most faithful and loyal Inquisitor, John. He's got an article from Forbes, which is a break with tradition. I'm not sure how I feel about this. Usually he takes a picture of the Wall Street Journal on his countertop and sends it to us. And now we've got a ripped out picture of Forbes, and it's being sent to us. Now, the first thing I'll say on that is Forbes is much more sensationalistic than the Wall Street Journal, except in the opinion pieces of the Wall Street Journal, just to lay that out in advance for everyone. And Forbes has made its living. It's the majority of its sales come from making predictions or estimates on wealth, how much people are worth. They are grossly inaccurate, as if you ask them, they will tell you. And if you ask anyone that's ever been rated by them, they will tell you. But it's still being posted, and so it's what they're known for. The article in question comes from a release from the CEBR. The CEBR is a British think tank. It's UK based. I shouldn't say British. It's United Kingdom. Those of you that don't know the difference, the British Isles include a whole bunch of islands west of Europe. And the biggest of those islands is called Great Britain. It includes Wales and Scotland and England. A lot of people think Great Britain is synonymous with the UK, but UK has things everywhere. Okay. So this think tank, it's the center, and you have to spell that in the UK manner. That is not an ER in center. It's an RE in center. The Center for Economics and Business Research. Every few months, they come out with other predictions about the future. And every year, they talk about their predictions for the GDP of countries into the future. And every year they make big headlines, and every year they revise their earlier predictions to something else. They don't maintain the same predictions year after year, even though they're talking about the same point in the future. So that should tell you something right off. Their estimates are just that, they're estimates, and we've said it probably already in this program four times. The future is uncertain. So... what we're talking about here, the article in question, let's get back to the question, is the world economy is poised to reach $100 trillion in gross domestic product for the world in 2022, for the first time. That's kind of a big deal. $100 trillion is not a small amount, but I mean, we're talking about the entire planet. It's a lot.
It's a bunch. Yeah. It's a bunch.
We call that a lot in technical terms. Yeah.
Or a bunch. A whole bunch.
Or sometimes, half bunch. Sometimes we say things like ginormous. These are very technical terms. We don't expect everyone to follow these. The prediction is that in 2030, China surpasses the United States in GDP. And the question here is, with the current expansion in global chip manufacturing and the reparation of businesses back to U.S. soil, is this a realistic projection? And the answer to that is realistic has to have some wide, put the alley bumpers up on the bowling alley, because realistic is based on assumptions of a bunch of stuff we don't know. There's a lot of things that could cause this to be different by years or by forever. If China has a civil war, if there's so many things that could happen, a big meteor strike, there's a lot of crazy things that could go on, and some less crazy, some historically normal things could happen. But barring those things, it comes back to two really important pieces of economic fact. This isn't theory. There's a lot of theory in economics. The fact is that the growth in your economy is based on two things. You can get supply and demand out of these two things. Demographics, that's how many people you have. If you have a growing population, if you have an educated population, if you have a shrinking population, if you're got a lot of disease. The second piece besides demographics is productivity. So if you have a lot of people that are very productive, you're going to have a very great economy. That seems, when stated that simply, people go, oh yeah, that makes sense. China has 1.4 billion people that are becoming more educated than they were. There is a limit to that growth, because at some point, they can't keep educating on top of the education. At some point, they hit a maturity level, and it's a very incremental growth instead of this kind of exponential growth they've been seeing. Because if you take somebody out of a rice paddy and you give them an education and make them manufacture computer chips, the growth from profitability of however much rice they could grow by hand, literally putting their hands in and picking and planting, to running the machines that are manufacturing chips, is just, exponential is the only word for it. There's not a real comparison. But at some point, you either run out of demand for chips, because not everyone in the world can make chips, or you run out of people to educate. So it matures. They get to a point where they can't grow as fast. And if you look at our growth rate, it's pretty standard for the people in the United States of working age to be literate. In fact, it would be unusual in the extreme to have someone that was completely illiterate in the workforce in the United States, that was born and raised in the United States. It happens, but it's pretty rare. And when you look at that from a demographic perspective, that makes our population more productive than a population that half of the workforce is illiterate. Because how do you train somebody on equipment? You have to speaking to them about, I know it's a bad pun, and there's probably groaning all over our listening audience just now. I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. It's just who I am. All right, so China has a becoming more educated and large demographic. And up to this point has had a lot of support from other powers in growing its education so that it could be more productive and build stuff for us. They had a great labor force.
There's that economics term again.
Stuff?
Right.
Yes. We a bunch of stuff. Yes. We have to be very careful about using these technical terms.
Right.
We don't want to confuse anyone. So China is getting close to that maturity point already, and you lay on top of it that it's not ever been that innovative. I should rephrase that. It has never sustained innovation. This is something really cool. You know, the replaceable parts in a manufacturing line is attributed to Eli Whitley in the United
States. Whitney.
That's what I said. Eli
you
Whitney.
You said Whitley. No, you said Whitley.
Eli Whitney. Okay, just in case I didn't say it correctly, Eli Whitney. Except that in the era before current era, we used to call it BC, it's now BCE. The Chinese were doing that with crossbows. Crossbows. In a time that bow craft was pretty normal. Now, it didn't maintain. It was kept in a secret organization. It didn't spread across to everyone else. It didn't change the world.
Romans did it too.
The Romans did it too, yeah.
Romans did it a lot, as a matter of fact.
Just to make that extremely clear, the reason why the width of our railroads, the distance between the tracks in the United States, is the width that it is based on the width of the axles of the Roman wagons.
Chariots.
And chariots. The wagons were made based on the size of the chariots, but they didn't use the chariots for very long.
Right.
And so they left grooves in all the roads of Europe, these big roads that were made by the Romans. And the first folks to start manufacturing steam engines that ran on rails used those grooves to put their rails in. So the fact that because otherwise if you were moving them on the road, it would break their axles. So they had to get the cars from one place to another, and it was easiest to put the rails in the existing grooves. So the United States rails are based on mass manufacturing by the Romans. Now, that's probably some supply sergeant somewhere making a decision. No, let's just get rid of all those ones that don't fit the right size. But it changed the shape of the roads, which changed for thousands of years. Anyway, so the Chinese have been innovative. Others have been innovative, but it's not been supported by the system. It hasn't been rewarded on the private side. It's been owned by the state. And that's where they are. So the next level of prediction, so they're saying at some point China will supersede. These words are, their GDP will be bigger than the United States at some point, unless there's some big, big issue in China. And then it will get smaller again. And the reason is their population is shrinking faster than our population. And we have a more educated and a far more productive workforce. I mean, once they reach parity with us, say they're at the same level of GDP as us, that means they have almost 5 people working as hard as they can to keep up with one of ours. And they're getting less innovative and less productive as we move manufacturing back. So it will be a temporary thing, most likely.
I actually don't think, and this is certainly not a certainty. Did you like it?
Certainly not.
It's possible that the Chinese GDP will exceed that of the United States. I think it is unlikely. And let me tell you why I think it's unlikely.
Well, wait, you're saying the opposite of me. I say it's likely for a very temporary period, and you're saying it's unlikely. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
I think they won't ever get there. And a quick and dirty way of explaining that is if you go back to, they're saying basically by 2030, which is
8 years away.
8 years away. But if you go back to the late 1990s or the early 1990s, the same forecasts were being made about Japan, that Japan's GDP would exceed that of the United States.
Yep.
And that
you mentioned this pre-program, the Back to the Future.
We'd be dominated. And go watch Back to the Future, the movie.
The second one.
Back to the Future 2, and you will see that.
Where they actually go to the future.
By 2020, which is, we've just been through a little while ago. By 2020, the Japanese would dominate the world, and their GDP would be the largest in the world, and the United States would be subservient to Japan.
Yep.
Which didn't work. And there's a lot of good economic reasons it didn't work. And there's a lot of good economic reasons, I believe, that trying to forecast, forecasting what's going to happen 8 years from now is a little awkward, to say the least. I don't know that that anybody can do that very well. But the Chinese have a socioeconomic system that has grown very rapidly during a period of time. They allowed a U.S.-style chaos to reign in their system.
Yeah.
Basically, unrestrained capitalism. Chairman Xi is cracking down on that, and he's creating, in essence, his role to be that of the emperor in a top-down hierarchical system that anybody that's different gets their head lopped off. And that type of system doesn't make for maximum creativity or productivity or growth. It's been tried over and over again through history. The strength in the United States is also what is perceived by the rest of the world as our weakness, which is that we are divided and chaotic. And we are divided and chaotic. We are 50 nation states bound together in one federal system, with all 50 of the nation states, the states of the United States, doing their own thing in their own way and seeing how well it works. It's 50 separate laboratories, and we have, as long as we can continue in our chaotic, uncomfortable is an understatement, state, I think we will continue to grow and we will continue to thrive. China is reaching hard towards uniformity and peace in the sense that no chaos. This does not provide for good growth. And I think it's a big experiment. It's a huge socioeconomic experiment that 100 years from now will be noted carefully in the textbooks. But I think our system has a greater potential for growth. And as a result, I think the Chinese are going to hit a brick wall before too long.
And I have a quick correction to make, an apology. I am suffering some migraine symptoms, so my words are getting all befuddled, mixed up. Mm. John, as you are correct, I looked at the word Fortune magazine and I said the word Forbes. And Forbes does then go on to make a bunch of its fortune in selling estimates of value. And Fortune is better than Forbes, but it's still a bit more on the tabloid side than, it's much more opinion-based than the Wall Street Journal, except in the opinion section.
And if you go back and look at the CEBR, they have good short-term forecasts. There's a principle in economics that I don't know has ever been, until now, stated as a principle, but it's true. And that is, economic forecasting, solid economic forecasting like you're seeing in this article, tends to be fairly accurate out about 1 or 2 years. And the accuracy falls to about random at 5 years. And beyond 5 years, this is what's really fascinating. Beyond 5 years,
it's more likely wrong.
Economic forecasting is less economic, meaning earnings of corporations, GDP of countries, whatever, beyond 5 years becomes less accurate
than random,
than a random number.
Right.
Which means that anybody that's forecasting 8 years out, something's going to happen. The mere fact that they're forecasting it means it's not very probable. It is a less than 50% probability.
And to people say, why is that? Why is that? They ask all these questions about, like, when the Congressional Budget Office is trying to predict how much revenue comes in, and they never get it right. They're just a bunch of, I've heard all kinds of things. It's kind of like trying to predict a hurricane in 3 years. You can see where you can run into some issues there. There are a lot of things that change between now and then that are completely unpredictable. Now, not just a hurricane, but all the hurricanes and where they will be. So this particular story, this article, has a graph. And it's a kind of graph that is very, very frowned upon in the financial world, by the way. And that's where you stack the areas on top of each other, kind of like a line graph. Because it always makes the one on top look huge to your eyes, even though it may be almost the same size as the one right below it. I know that's it's very difficult to talk to about graphs on the radio. Please look at my next slide as I'm okay. And on this one, we have nothing because you cannot see it. So that's a worse graph than this stacked area graph. But the reality is that they're making predictions about Indonesia being taken by Spain and then overtaking Spain and then jumping over Russia, which is going over Australia, and Korea dropping below. This is impossible, impossible to predict, but it sells good magazines. And the think tank is going to make their predictions based on what they know right now, because it does give you some assumptions to work with. A lot of planning has to start with assumptions, because we don't know the future. And if you begin by saying, where is a growing place that I could put business? And you try to predict the areas that are going to grow the most, you can get more accurate than saying they're going to grow more than another place. But just say high growth. And that's kind of what's happening here. It's really, really, I would just say impossible to predict what the country order on GDP will be in the future. This is one, you probably know this because I bring this question up a lot on the demographic side, but the vast majority of people in the world, by vast, I mean educated people, do not know the answer to this. When I say what's the most populous country on the planet, almost everybody knows that one. Well, that's China. Well, it's about to be India. Sometime in this year, it will be India. Okay. Well, what's the second most? Well, I just gave you that answer. It's India. And this is the one that people don't get. What's the third most populated country on the planet? I get a lot of blank stares. I get a lot of, do you know?
I think it's Indonesia.
Nope. This is why it's so crazy. It is okay. Like we have a massive blind spot. It's us. We're the third most populated country on the planet. People don't realize that. That's part of the reason why we became a world power. It's not like our population was more educated than the UK population in the 19th century. It was about the same. In fact, they were a lot more productive. We were spread all over the place, and we were not exactly productive. We were settling things and having lots of babies. Then we became more educated. We became one of the most educated places to be on the planet when you consider size as well as other aspects. We have the best secondary education, the college level, university level. We have by far, and this is not really debatable, the best education system when it comes to universities and colleges. The only, when ratings are done this, the top 100 only include top 100 universities in the world for the last decade has only included two countries. And one country absolutely dominates that, though the other country is close to the top as well. And that's the United States and the UK. The United States just has lots and lots and lots of high quality schools, and the UK has several, but they're much smaller than we are. They're 10% of the size of us demographically. So just laying that out, China's school system, the university system, is nowhere near the level of our system. The innovation, and this is the Sinovac, the vaccine there that's so ineffective. I mean, they're working on one to kind of replicate what Moderna has done, an RNA-based one, but they're nowhere near that. It's probably a year or two away before they have a vaccine that they're willing to give their system. And this is the last piece. I left the seed in my original beginning talk about demographics, unless sickness hits. What's happening in Hong Kong right now is really not good. The Hong Kong system is overrun with COVID. They have been lockdown mode, lockdown mode, lockdown mode. Images of hospitals with beds surrounding the hospital full of people are on the Wall Street Journal right now. Hong Kong doctors saying we get overwhelmed in a bad flu season. And the fact that their medical staff have mandatory quarantine when exposed of 2 weeks. Think how do you how do you deal with that? You're going to get exposed if you're in medicine. So this is another thing. They could get hit a lot harder than we did in some ways in China as far as the economic side, because their answer is total lockdown as soon as there's an infection in the area. That could have a long-term effect on Chinese economic futures.
I'd like one last comment on the China question before we break for commercials.
Wow, we're almost to the end of the hour.
If you, instead of China on that chart, you put Chinese.
Right.
I might agree with the chart. And the reason I say that is, and this is the key, I think, to the fact that China will not likely dominate the world or have the largest GDP. There are a tremendous number of people who are very intelligent, who are working very, very hard to get out of China.
Yeah.
And a lot of them want to come to the United States. So when the cream of the crop of a country, the most intelligent, the most innovative, the most creative people in a country want out and they want to go someplace else, this does not bode well for the future of that country. And notably, still, the people who leave China primarily want to come to the United States. I know we don't sometimes see it that way. We denigrate ourselves pretty hard. But that's the reality. And to the degree that we open up to the most brilliant people in China, as opposed to trying to fence them out and persecute them, which we have unfortunately done in the recent past, I believe that we will thrive, because this is where the United States has traditionally thrived, is the best and most brilliant people in the world have a tendency to want to leave places that are dictatorships and come here. And we need to break for commercials.
We sure do. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have emails open and waiting to be received. Email addresses at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And that's Tango Papa, Whiskey Charlie, or The Personal Wealth Coach. And we will be back on the other side of these very important announcements. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and
Jeff
McClure. We're getting good at this. It's like 3 weeks in a row where we haven't messed up our own names. Wow. Now, if we can ever get our economics on the same package, not mess that up. Let's see if we can figure that out. More practice. That's all it is. More practice. We're back. We really covered China a lot. A more imminent thing happening right now, and this is where some history can come in. We've talked about 1938 multiple times, what Germany was doing with the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia, and then went and met with Chamberlain, and I can never remember the French premier's name at that point. It's very French. He had a side role. It was in Munich. And they, amongst them, split Czechoslovakia without Czechoslovakia being present. Chamberlain had a non-aggression pact signed with Hitler, and he went home. Now, why is that important? Why was that a big deal? Because up till then, Hitler had said, there's a deadline, and I'm invading. And the British thought that they were about to go to war. London was being dug up and trenches were being built and bunkers were being dug because they thought they were going to have bombers over their heads as soon as the invasion took place. So Chamberlain, after coming home and then declaring peace for our time, was met resoundingly with massive applause. People were singing for "He's a Jolly Good Fellow" in the streets, 5 miles between the airport and the palace were lined with cheering people on his return. And it's been kind of synonymous with appeasement since then. What's important to recognize here is that the UK wasn't sitting on its hands for the next year after Sudetenland, and then when Hitler actually invaded the rest of Czechoslovakia. They were building aircraft and navy. At the time that in 1938, there was no way that the UK could have had a Battle of Britain. It just was not possible. They didn't have enough aircraft. They didn't have enough people trained to fly the aircraft. It just was not possible. So they spent a year ramping up their military. My fear is that Germany will not do this if Russia invades Ukraine. That if is very wobbly. It's very, very likely that they invade. You have your finger up, pregnant with thought.
The prime minister was Edward Dulage.
That's why I can't remember his name. Is my French accent is great when I'm mimicking the Pink Panther, but it's not a real French accent. And well, I make myself look bad.
It's spelled Daladier, but it's pronounced Dulage, and he is such a minor footnote in history that we don't remember him. And I noticed that the French are playing pretty much the same role now. The parallels between 1938 and the present are eerie, to say the least.
Yeah.
The argument, by the way, for those of you who didn't know this, that Germany or Hitler specifically had for taking the Sudetenland, which is a big piece of Czechoslovakia, and without which Czechoslovakia could not be defended, was that the people in the Sudetenland spoke German. And he had determined that they were being persecuted by the rest of Czechoslovakia, which is the same argument, by the way, that Putin is using.
Yeah.
He promulgated the big lie under Goebbels, and he claimed that there were attacks once he took Sudetenland. It was given to him, actually, and the UK and France forced Czechoslovakia to give it up. Then he said that Czechoslovakia was attacking or threatening to attack Sudetenland and harm German-speaking people, and that's when he took the rest of Czechoslovakia, which, by the way, did not cause the Allies to go to war. We didn't really have Allies at that point.
Well, the UK declared war at that point. Poland, I'm sorry.
The UK declared war when they invaded Poland because he didn't make any pretense on invading Poland, and Poland had a treaty with the United Kingdom.
Right.
But the point is that the parallels between the late 1930s and right now are absolutely eerie. If we get an invasion of Ukraine at this point and the Kremlin takes it over, I think the same thing will happen again, too, by the way. It's probably already put into motion. The Economist had a really good article that says how Putin saved NATO.
Yeah.
The NATO was falling apart. But once we see an invasion of a state by Russia,
there's a reason for a mutual defense agreement.
I think you will see people thinking maybe we do need to have armies and navies and so on. It's a little late for the European states to build theirs up because it takes a while to do that. And I think probably the United States, just as the United States did, by the way, in the 1930s, it was at that point we started increasing our defense budgets and getting ready to enter World War II because we figured it was probably going to happen. Now, we didn't get ready enough, and we were looking in the wrong direction, by the way. We didn't really anticipate Japan
right,
making a major strike against us, just as we don't anticipate China making a major strike against us. But I really don't like to see history parallel like this. But
not for these ones. I like the parallel with the Roaring Twenties, just not the World War I part. I don't like that part of that preluded the Roaring Twenties of the 20th century. So,
well,
we're looking
this
at this
more like World War II.
Yeah, if Russia invades Ukraine, we're not going to have a military response. Neither is the rest of Europe. It's just not going to happen. We're not capable of it. We're not in a place where we can. However, the rest of the NATO countries around there are getting troops sent to them right now by NATO and getting equipment sent to them right now by NATO. Poland just signed an $8 billion tank manufacturing agreement with the United States, which is not what Russia wanted to happen, because Poland's tanks do not compare to Russia's tanks right now. But if they get the Abrams in there, the Russians' tanks don't compare to that. They've got some really, really newer kind of one-man tanks that are not really in production and cost way too much for Russia right now, but they keep kind of parading them out to show that they exist, like AI tank. But that's not in full production and won't be for another decade. So what we're looking at is we are beefing up the presence. The big question is, will Germany, will France? Because they're the ones that are most likely the soft belly of Europe right now. Their defense is really, really pitiful at the moment. They don't have a functional air force in Germany. It's just, it's not functional.
There's another non-parallel that I think is helpful that we need to keep an eye on. Oh, we're out of time. Let's do the next hour.
Yeah, we'll talk more about this next hour. It's a big subject. If you'd like to talk to us off the air, we've got voicemail waiting locally at
254-947-1111.
Or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can contact us there through the contact form or through email, Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. And you can go anywhere that offers podcasts to hear more of our semi-not-so-melodious voices talking sometimes in unison. Bald guys on podcasts are more palatable. Let me see how many senses I can bring into the same conversation.